Is a black development organization aimed at developing the black community to its maximum potential through a focus on education and economics with a trace of hard work, honesty, and integrity. And if you go to their website, right on that front page, you'll see something that says Amazon Smile. Ting! I wish I had that ting, because I was smiling when I said that. But you'll see Amazon Smile. And what that is, it's a program that Patch Inc. is enrolled into with Amazon. So when you go to Amazon and you purchase your items, because y'all know, I do stocks, so I know y'all going to shop at Amazon, and Amazon getting all this money. And so when you go shop at Amazon, a portion of your proceeds will go to PAX Inc. to help PAX Inc. through their operation as Black Think Tank, developed to uplifting and empowering and mobilizing the Black community through the information that they provide. So PACTSINC.org, and when you're on that website, you're going to find a plethora of resources that you can use to enhance yourself. Once again, PACTSINC.org. Yeah, and while you're online, make sure you visit our Freedom Train website at www.freedomtrainradio.com. I'm on the front page with my shirt off, Pat in the back hating, Shelby and Candace doing their thing on their podcast, Enigma doing his thing on his podcast. Knows what's coming out of his mouth, right? And so we getting it in. So, Pat, how you want to be presented on the website? Because right now you on the website, hey, so you want to be presented in a better light?
Nah, you know, I like to present myself in the worst light possible. That way when people meet me, they're like, oh, you a lot better than I thought you was. And it's like, oh, yeah. So there you go.
Hey, there you go. Lower the expectation.
Word.
Remember? Word. Oh, that Mad TV. That was that Mad TV back in the day, man.
I don't remember.
Oh, hey, bro, it's August, man. I know. It's August, bro. How you feeling, man?
I'm feeling like what Tracy Morgan used to say, 8 cans of shark shit. No. I don't know.
That's what they used to say.
He said something like that.
Hold on. Kawhi Leonard said he got to, if this thing, God damn it, this thing would move slow and I'm right when I want to try to be timely with
right,
my shit.
Right. There you go.
Hey, man, technology is a bitch, ain't it? It's all good, man. Guess what, though? Better late than never.
It might be better never than late in some cases.
Hey, shut up. Hey, but sports is back though. Are you excited?
Come on, Joe. Really? You gonna ask me that?
Pat, though, can you give me some fabricated excitement? Can you at least act the part out like we rehearsed before we hit play? Yeah, you gonna act like we ain't rehearsed this before we hit play?
Because we didn't rehearse this before we hit play. You gotta get Kawhi Leonard live back in here.
Yeah. That shit funny, man. But nah, man, you know, the NBA is back. The WNBA is back. Major League Baseball is back. Sports is back. And these leagues are doing their Black Lives Matter thing, right? So they're kneeling before the game now. It's the thing to do. Now, if you don't kneel, something is wrong with you. And it's just real interesting, as you know, we've been in this fight for a little minute now, and we've been looking for allies. We're always looking for allies to do tangible things, right? Not just gestures, but tangible things, right? Because that's really what makes you an ally, not what you say, but what you do. Because you can tell me, like, if I have a business and I'm looking for investors, you can tell me that you're going to invest in me, but if you don't actually invest in me, then are you helping me? So same thing with this. Like, there's no real investment in Black America from these so-called allies. And though having this is different, I'm not going to say a step up, but it's different from not saying anything. But I often think about the evolution of white supremacy, or the malleability, if I say, I hope I said that right, is malleable.
You said it right.
Okay. Yeah, and because it conforms, that's why it's still here. It conforms to different situations and different things. And if you've studied white supremacy, you understand that. But see, that's the thing. My concern is it's using these gestures to be the new thing that people do rather than actual tangible things. And I'm just paying attention from somebody who watches sports, who has a sports podcast, who always analyzes things from a Black perspective, that everybody's saying things, but nobody's doing things. And that just helped me remember what I wanted to rant about. But what you think about that before I get to my rant?
Oh, I mean, I was actually having a talk with my wife's brother about this, because he asked me what I thought about the NBA. I guess one of the NBA players chose to stand up. And he was, you know, he's been catching a lot of flack for it.
Yeah, he shouldn't.
Right. And so he was like, well, you know, like, what do you think? And I told him, I said, in my opinion, at this point, standing up is the same as taking a knee.
Yeah.
Like, I really don't see much difference. I understand. And for this, like, we talked about this a bunch of different times on the show. I go back to why Colin Kaepernick started taking a knee versus sitting.
And yeah, that's my first issue, too.
Right.
Well.
And the reasoning that the guy gave behind wanting to see people take a knee versus sitting down. And the reasoning was giving more respect to the flag than standing up does, actually. So I'm at the point now where it's like, look, y'all not even paying attention to the reasoning behind why taking a knee is a thing.
I didn't even talk about that on the fix. I didn't even bother to talk about it, because it's a non-issue at this point. There are no consequences to kneeling.
Right.
And there are no gains from kneeling at this point. Kneeling, it's like you know when a dance come out in the hood and only the people in the hood, the Black folk doing it in the culture, and then next thing, you know, a couple years later, you see an old white man doing it, and they're like, oh, the shit's dead now. No, but seriously, that's where we are. Because, listen, Kaepernick did all the hard work. Like, let's just be real. Let's just be straight up. Cap did all the – well, Cap, Eric Reed, Tony Cromartie, Kenny Stills, and a couple other players who I'm forgetting, but I apologize for forgetting their names. But those are the ones that come to me. I know Tony Cromartie got cut, even though I didn't really believe that him kneeling was the full – at the time, I didn't believe that the kneeling was the full reason he got cut. But now, just now looking back, and I think I was wrong. I think I was wrong. Matter of fact, I was wrong. I feel like I'm wrong. And, you know, Tony Cromartie, apologizing you on air, because I do believe now that you were cut because you kneeled. And, you know, but Cap, like, that what happened with Cromartie kind of got swept under the rug. So I do want to put that out there, that I do now believe that Cromartie was cut because he kneeled, and so did he and his wife. And I own a fix. At the time, I said he didn't, but now I do believe this, so I'm apologizing. I believe that he did. You and Marty, because it was cut now because you kneel. But the thing is, the heavy lifting is already done. So you kneeling now holds no way. It means nothing. It's got not going to move any needle. Like, there are no barriers to kneeling. There are no consequences to kneeling now.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Well, in that sense, I agree with you wholeheartedly because you're right. The guys that got cut, and we can talk all day about, because I never want people to feel like, well, what about all of the other people, you know, throughout history that did stuff? And we're getting, look, that's fine, and we do pay deference. We do pay our respect to those guys who came before this generation. But yeah, we also acknowledge what, you know, like what the players of this generation are doing.
Right.
And so those guys that got cut when all of this first happened and that took the lumps to make it be something that's socially acceptable, those guys did do all of the heavy lifting.
Those are real heroes.
Right.
Those are the real heroes.
And now once something becomes socially acceptable, it's no longer impactful.
Right.
That goes back to what you were saying. Like, it's not doing anything at this point. Like,
it's not. It doesn't mean anything now because it's like the sting has been taken out of it. And that's what I get at when I'm talking about the evolution or the malleability of white supremacy, it being able to adapt and absorb. It's like when Constantine, it was Constantine when he realized that embracing Christianity would allow him to conquer more of the world. And that was part of his strategy. So what he did, he became Christian or Catholic at the time, whatever they was. He became that, his whole court became that. And through Christianity, they were able to conquer the world. It adapts, man. You got to read history, man. I keep telling y'all, study history. All y'all people like, I hate history. That's why we keep repeating this shit. That's why we keep falling for the okie doke. Like, y'all, all our leaders, all our leaders always want to meet with the enemy, not understanding that there's a long history behind our leaders meeting with the enemies and coming out dead.
You know, there's a failure in that, not to get too far off subject, but, you know, I do want to point out the fact that, and not for us, but especially for those people listening, like, if you hate history, it's for the same reason that you hate math and the same reason that you hate, like, finances and stuff like that. It hasn't been explained to you why it's important, and it hasn't been explained to you how it continues to impact you to this day. So without those explanations of the significance of it, of course you hate it. You don't see any connection to it. So to anybody that would sit back and say, I hate history, you know, I would say the same thing that I say to somebody that says, I hate math, or I hate finances, or I hate this, or I hate that. Like, figure out how it's connected to you. Like, if you don't see any connection to it, then it's not going to interest you. History is one of the most, if not the most, significant and important and interesting subjects on the planet. It doesn't get too much more interesting than history.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, man, look, like, even though I don't consider the Bible a history book, but, like, the history that's in it, man, I tell people, that's like an HBO movie, man. That's, turn that on, man. You watch that and you can get anything. You get it all reading the Bible, man. But it's just like history, man. Like, history is very, very, very important. But not to linger too long on that, because I want to get to this before we get into our main topic. So are you familiar with the name J.W. Lucas?
No, I'm not.
All right, nobody is really until a couple of days ago. So J.W. Lucas turns out to be, and you can Google him, because J.W. Lucas is basically a white guy who's a producer. Hip-hop producer, and he took it upon himself to go on Twitter last week and basically talk shit about Breonna Taylor and basically saying that she deserved to be killed, even though he tried to tiptoe around it, but basically saying her involvement with drug dealers is the reason why she was killed, even though she had no involvement at the time with anybody who had anything to do with drugs. And so it was a big fallout from that because it was basically a white boy being disrespectful and talking out his ass. And then he ended up in a spat with Tamika Mallory. And in that spat, he told Tamika Mallory that he was more capable than any black person to lead black people away from white supremacy. Then he was on, he had a spat with Tariq Nasheed, said the same thing. He had a conversation with Risa Islam. I thought Risa Islam had the best interaction with him because Risa Islam used calm, tact, and intelligence to make that white boy look stupid. But then again, he reiterated that he was more capable than any black person. He was like, he understands the black experience more than any black person. He's more capable than any black person to lead black people away from white supremacy because his ideas are revolutionary. Even though Risa Islam asked him, has he done anything tangible? And he said, no, he hasn't done anything tangible. But his ideas are just so far ahead of any black person. And because basically the reason why black people are still under the throes of white supremacy because we're not listening to him because he has the ultimate ideas that can help black people. And I was like, wow. So, but I was also surprised at the amount of attention he got because, like I said, he went from a Instagram Live with Tamika Mallory to doing one with Tariq Nasheed to doing one with Risa Islam and some other people. And I was like, well, wow, I understand you want to get at this white boy, but y'all getting at this white boy in public. Y'all giving him the shine he want.
That's why I didn't say nothing when the first pause came.
I was
trying to figure out why are these people, these so-called leaders of the community, giving this person this kind. I could see if like it was like some random person or some small up-and-coming person or, you know, somebody that doesn't have a large audience, I could see. But, like, all of those people you mentioned have a sizable following. Like, yeah. Why in the hell are y'all engaged? Y'all are making him a spectacle just by interacting with him.
Now, I don't blame Tariq Nasheed and Risa Islam for their interaction. And I don't blame Tamika Mallory, but Tamika Mallory's was reactive as far as the tweet. Theirs were reactive as far as his tone and how he was addressing and coming at Tamika Mallory because he was definitely disrespectful. And I'm not going to lie, I watched all the videos and I want to slap the fuck out that white boy for the way he was speaking about Brianna and to Tamika Mallory. But see, that I'm just saying, you know, certain things don't need to be handled in the public.
Not like, and this is the thing, right? So, we're always telling people, right, be careful about the situations you find yourself in. You know, and be careful about how you handle them once you find yourself there. Like this white boy, regardless of how, look, if we honestly think that white people ain't being disrespectful towards our dead, then we really don't know what the fuck is going on.
Yeah. He won. J.W. Lucas won because now people know who he is.
Right. Right, right. And that's exactly my point. Like, all of those people, Tamika Mallory and everybody, like, it's not your, in my opinion, it's not your opinion, it's not your job on that level to stoop down to this level to be dealing with individual crazy white people. No, we got a systemic issue to handle. We don't have time to get bogged down with the craziness. Because by doing shit like this, now you expose this dude not only to your fans, but also to other white people who are following you that hate your fucking guts. Now you've made him somebody that has a name, has a following. And
could gave him over platform.
Right. And now he potentially becomes an even larger problem down the line. So now even in all of this, even in me saying, I would love to see him get slapped if he was being disrespectful about one of our dead, I got to look at our leaders and be like, what the fuck are y'all doing? Y'all are not helping. Y'all, like, I'm looking at them. Not even at the white boy. I'm looking at them. Like, what the fuck are y'all doing? Is it this easy?
Yeah. You know, like I say, I know Tamika was one of the first to, like, get with him, like, as far as connect with him to check him. And they basically had a screaming match. he and Tariq Nasheed had a screaming match, and he and Risa, it's, like I said, Risa handled him the best. But they're dealing with a pompous, stupid white boy who is smart at marketing, because now everybody knows his name. All over YouTube now. Within hours, he had done, within 12 hours, 12 to 16 hours, he had done at least 3 interviews that were on the net. Because I watched all 3 of them on YouTube. We come up within hours.
This is a situation where I feel like the black leadership is too smart for its own good. Like, they all probably thought they was going to buy, I'm going to shut this white boy up. He ain't ready for what I'm finna bring to the table.
See, that should have been a pull-up situation, and not necessarily something that leads to violence. But that should have been a pull-up situation where we're going to talk off camera, we're going to talk in private, right, and we're going to straighten you out in private. And just right, letting you know now, in private, we're doing this now. If you do it again, we're going to handle it in public and embarrass you. But, and because we're not going to give you the satisfaction of you being popularized by our outrage. But what we will do is pull up on you and let you know that what you're doing is out of pocket.
That's what I think. If you must respond, it has to be a private response. You do, especially not if you got a national audience and all 3 of those people. Now, granted, I don't expect much from Tariq Nasheed, and I think Tariq Nasheed has openly told everybody not to expect much from him. So I respect that. But I know Tamika Mallory fashions herself to be a leader of the new school. I don't know a lot about the other person.
Risa Islam, he fashions himself in the same ability.
So if that's how you fashion yourself, you got to move better than this. Like, you got to be smarter about how you handling things than this. You can't let no dumbass white boy saying dumbass shit that you know is being said anyways. You don't let no shit like this get you riled up to the point where you having a public spat with some no-name-ass white boy who's saying the same crazy shit that half of the other no-name white boys is out there saying. I ain't got time for that. I'm not even, if I'm on that level, I'm not even on social media in that way. Like, that video would have never reached me, and if it did, I'd have never pressed play on it. Because I'm not on that level. And I'm still not finna go press play on it. Well, I might go press play on it now, cause I ain't on that level. But I wouldn't respond. Nah.
I thought it was interesting because, like, the logic the white guy had, it was basically the regular pompous white male ideology that I can save you black people better than you guys can save yourself, because I know you better than you know you, because I've studied and you're not studied. And it's just like, well, for one, we are too nice in the black community. We are too inviting. We're too accepting. Because this dude has this ideology because he feels too comfortable.
Right.
And we got to look at the black people that he's been around. And then the question is, like, you know, I saw in the comments of some of the videos I was watching, I saw a lot of people saying his career is over. I was like, man, Tekashi 6ix9ine, his career ain't over. Everybody got a chance.
I don't know where these people get these illusions of self-terminating a career from. Like, well, for starters, even if he is a hip-hop producer, let's be real. Hip-hop jumped the shark a while ago. I mean, like, hip-hop is not all black. And even the black people that are in it, most of them have not expressed a connection or a sense of camaraderie with the pro-black movement out there. You're talking about a bunch of young kids getting money, and that's all they care about. I'm not saying there aren't others out there, but I'm saying most. So this might actually boost his career. Hip-hop ain't even street no more. Like you said, with Tekashi 6ix9ine, that kind of proves that hip-hop ain't street no more. This dude was rolling with what was supposed to be the roughest of the rough, got locked up, snitched on everybody, and he's still alive talking about making more records.
Man, the dude put out a song. Duke got a song with the dude. The last song he just put out went number one on Billboard.
Right. So that just proves that hip hop ain't street no more. Like let's stop with the bullshit, man. Let's stop with the illusions. Let's just, and even if nobody does go to him to buy his record, guess what? I bet he got a book deal in him. I bet if he write a book, he gonna make a lot of money from people buying it.
Man, he finna, you know how many more? No, right. You know how many more interviews and things buddy's finna get?
Right.
Like responding to him was the worst thing that anybody could have done.
Right, and that's why I
should let it go into obscurity.
Right, and again I go back to it. Is it that easy? Do all I have to do to get an audience is say some crazy shit about a black woman?
Yes. Because everybody started their talk with him off with, you know, I've never heard of you before today. I don't know who you are, what you do. And I was like, well, if everybody keeps saying, right. You was able to get in contact with him.
And so, you know, even with him, as he's taking these interviews, he already know what he walking into.
Yeah. Because he know what he said. He know what he did. That white boy ain't stupid. He understand everything he did.
So I'm just, okay. That's how y'all move? Okay. All right. Well, I just caused more respect for all three of them. I sure did. And I said it.
I didn't lose no respect for Tariq because Tariq doing what he always do. So for me, I don't look at Tariq as somebody who's going to change the community. I look at Tariq as an entertainer.
That's true.
So, but anywho, the reason we came together. Hey, so y'all know the month of August, every August, the Freedom Train, we are a part of, this is our mental health awareness month for the black community. And we like to dedicate all of our podcasts to either segments or full shows about different things, or all things dedicated to mental health and awareness. And we're going to have interviews coming up. There's mental health professionals. Hopefully we can get some people who can probably get some stories and some things. So we got a lot of stuff in the works, and we got a lot of stuff that we're working out. But Mental Health Awareness Month is here, and we at the Freedom Train Network want to make sure that we do our part in spreading the messages and making sure people know that it is okay as a black person in America to think and take care of your mental health. And those who don't take care of their mental health are the ones with the real issues. Ain't that right, Pastor?
Word.
So 2020 has been a hell of a year. And that could either be good, moderate, or bad for you, depending on your situation. But one of the main things that shook up 2020, well, you know, we started off with the death of Kobe Bryant. And everybody like, oh, my God, Kobe. And I ain't gonna lie, I still can't believe Kobe is dead. But we all forgot about Kobe when COVID-19 became the prominent issue in the world, because we are, unless you've been living under a rock, we are in the middle of a SARS-CoV-2 pandemic, which is COVID-19, or as mostly people say, coronavirus, or that Rona, right? And so I want to frame today's discussion around mental health, but we have a couple issues that we're dealing with at the same time that we're dealing with COVID-19. The storage issue of white supremacy and racism, we're still dealing with that. Dealing with protest. Now we're dealing with social distancing that comes with COVID-19. Already knowing that anxiety and depression are two of the main mental health issues within the black community. So kind of we're having a discussion today, framing it around mental health issues, but also coping during a pandemic, during protesting, coping, dealing with continued story racial injustices. So we do want to put a disclaimer out. Neither Pat nor I are mental health professionals. These are just opinions that we're giving based off the limited knowledge that we know. We both do have degrees in psychology, but I don't know if you want to come to me and lay on my couch. But we are giving our opinions, and we are giving information from research and things that we've done and conversations that we have had with professionals. But we want to get the conversation started so when we do bring a professional on, we can have questions already in people's minds that they want, that they could, you know, ask our professionals and different things or get answers from the professionals and contacting people. So COVID-19, Pat, mental health. Because remember now I remember when COVID first struck, one of the first things people were talking about was the amount of domestic violence that would increase because of the social distancing, because of us, you know, sheltering in place. You remember that?
Yep.
So, in addition to domestic violence issues, in addition to dealing with COVID, in addition to dealing with racial issues, in addition to these protests and rioting things, how do you think the state of black mental health is right now in America? What level would you say, low, moderate, or high? Is it good? Is it bad? Just your opinion based off, you know, observations, maybe assessments.
I mean, I think even without COVID-19, the state of the mental health of the black community was pretty bad. I think COVID is just another layer of bullshit on what's already a fucking ocean of bullshit. You know, it's one of them things, like, black people just can't seem to catch a break, and we can't seem to get enough time to chill long enough to fabricate a break. But, yeah, this COVID-19 thing, man, it's definitely added some extra elements into it. 2020 might actually go down in history as one of the most brutal years in American history.
Yeah, this year is definitely gonna be one for the books. But the death toll, the amount of death that we are experiencing as a nation, through whether it's in your personal life or through social media, think about it, Pat. It's not healthy. Like you say, black people are already dealing with a whole bunch of variables that go into decreasing our mental health, our mental space. So, but just in addition to COVID, the amount of death that we are witnessing is not healthy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I can see people being more depressed now. I can see people being more anxious now. But I'm just thinking about, what are people doing to cope? That's one question I do have for a lot of people. Like, well, I wonder what people are doing to cope.
That's a good question, actually. I mean, I think it's a good question. I don't know that people actually are coping, if we want to be 100% honest about the situation. That's where I go back to the situation for black people in America has just been what it's going to be, because I don't think people are coping, and even without COVID, I think black people have poor coping skills. Like,
sure.
I think we've always tried to escape, and the fact that you can't leave your house now does mean that even escape is impossible for a lot of people.
So just for the sake of clarity, what is the opposite of coping?
Not coping?
I mean, I know that, but like, how do we describe that? Like, what does that look like? Like, what does that feel like? I mean, because when we're saying it, it just popped in my head. Like, what is the opposite of coping? Because we never talk about that.
Well, and I got real like standard definition logic on you when I said not coping, because that's logic statement 101. I used to tease the kids about that all the time. You used to be like, what's the opposite of hot? And they'd be like, cold? No, the opposite of hot is not hot. Anyway, so you know, you got to define what coping is, though. And for me, coping is facing, dealing with the challenges, and the responsibilities, and the difficulties that you're faced with. You know, so to cope with something is to face it head on, to mentally and emotionally process what happened in a way that it no longer has a negative impact on your life.
But so do you believe that, especially our people, black people, do you believe that black people are doing that?
No.
The majority of us?
We are not doing that. I would venture to say that the majority of us are doing the exact opposite of that. Instead of turning to face our problems and responsibilities and difficulties, I would argue that as a community, because we can't speak individual to individual, but from my vantage point, as a community, instead of turning to face our problems, we turn to run away from our problems. We just want to go the other way. You know?
So I asked that because you say you believe we're not coping. So if we're not coping and we also are not dealing with our problems head on, are we just breaking down? Are we having mental breakdowns? Are black people just falling apart?
I think so.
See that?
I
mean, that's not a good space to be in.
If you look at the suicide numbers, and we've had shows about this before, that are going up in the community, especially amongst young people. If you look at the there are a lot of indicators that show that we are, in fact, having breakdowns. You know, we've always been sicker or more likely to get sick. We've always been dying at higher numbers, more likely to die. We've always been dealing with all of these complex and compromised situations in our lives that have to deal with not just physical or dietary issues, but also mental issues. Like, we've always been there. Go ahead.
Well, dietary issues and mental issues have been our long-standing issues since white people showed up, especially since they put us on those boats, because giving us bad food, us being cramped in those quarters and stuff, and then, now that deals with, you know, like I said, dietary and mental health issues. So those are long-standing, because let's just be real. Our mental issues as a group, maybe people have been able to heal some things or a lot of things on the individual level, but our mental health as a group is not there. And you can see it by the way we treat each other.
Yeah, that's another indicator in my opinion. Just look at the happiness index. Last I looked, and I don't know if it's reputable or not or credible or not, but last I looked, the happiness index, I'll have to find a link to share it, but the happiness index for the black community was down as well. Now, again, I don't know how credible that is because I haven't seen any, like, credentialed agencies or any what you would call reputable agencies talking about a happiness index for a particular group. But I have seen certain things of that nature, certain charts and certain discussions of that nature in various forums that I'm in. So, I put the disclaimer out there. I don't know that it's credible or not. But when I look around, I don't see happy black people. I can definitely say that. When I'm asking people questions, when I'm going about what's happening, when I'm talking to people, I don't see a lot of happy black
people. I see black people just make
it. Right.
Most black people around me, we just survive.
Right.
Yeah. Now, also, something that's tied into COVID is I talked about this on The Fix. There was an article in The Atlantic. The article, it was actually a 2019 article, where it is relevant now because of COVID. But it was talking about how high school athletes were dealing more with anxiety and depression. And one of the main young ladies in the article, a lot of her mental health issues came into play when she hurt her knee. She tore like an ACL and couldn't play, had to sit out. And she was saying that her identity was tied to the sport, to her being an athlete, to her being on this team. And so that just made me think about a lot of black kids who are in the positions to where their job is to save the family. But you might not be able to play sports this year. Especially, I just don't see how anything outside of professional sports are going to be able to operate this year. because, you know, professional sports have a certain limited amount of teams. These college sports got a whole bunch of motherfuckers coming from all over. I just don't see how it's going to happen. But now we're talking about heightened anxiety, heightened depression, heightened identity crisis going on within our community, because somebody's anxious because I may not be able to play, and if I can't play, will I be able to go to college? Or if I'm in college and I need the senior season because I came back for my senior season to help improve my draft spot to go to the league, and if I can't get to the league, how am I going to be able to take care of my family? But, you know, in that could be from professional level on down to middle school level. Just more and more black athletes, male and female, dealing with this.
Yeah, it's funny, too. I do think in certain situations, like with athletes, they're getting hit particularly hard because they typically use their sport as a way to get out aggression, as a way of, you know,
right.
kind of, it becomes their coping skill, even though I wouldn't even say that that's really coping. It is a way to kind of distract yourself to focus on something else. And they can't do that. And we've talked before, and I've said before, I don't think kids are getting hit as hard as people like to say they're getting hit, for the simple fact that even before COVID hit, kids were, for the most part, like social distance. Like, they meet up online in digital spaces. They, you know what I'm saying? They text. They don't really get together to hang out and all go places together like they did when we were kids. Not saying that it doesn't happen at all, but I mean, I am saying it doesn't happen at nearly the same rate that it did when we were growing
up. Yeah, it doesn't. Now, I was having a conversation with a friend, and she was telling me about how her child was. You can see how the child was being affected by social isolation, because she was one of the children who actually got a chance to go interact with real humans in real spaces. And now that she isn't, she's using her dolls as the replacement. And so it's like, I want to go, we're going somewhere, but I got to take my dolls, because if I don't take my dolls, they're going to be lonely. And it's like, well, you know, all those things. So I've heard of a few examples of kids who are actually still interacting, like going outside or meeting up with friends in real life like we used to do. They are definitely suffering from that because, for one, they may not have been meeting up in those virtual spaces. And even now, they may, like, meeting up in a virtual space, like for us, like, we would go crazy. Let's just be real. We used to go out. Like, I can't go outside for a day. I was going to go crazy. So you tell me 3 months I can't go outside to see my friends, 4 months, 6 months I can't go outside to see my friends. I can just imagine myself as a child. Like, all this pent-up energy and stuff, I'd probably be doing some crazy shit.
Yeah, I do think certain kids, like, so for me, and we talk about it, like, for me, I think that the younger kids are definitely getting hit hard because they still, for the most part, are, like, younger kids, like, I'd say 10, 11 and under, like, life really, like, they haven't, like, they have more access to technology.
Yeah.
But a good chunk of their day is, a good chunk of what they want to do is still spent physically interacting with other kids, other people.
With real people, right.
Right. They haven't caught the technology bug yet. But I know a lot of people are focusing on teenagers, like 13 through 18, and saying they're getting hit really hard. Those are the people, like, I'm not saying there aren't cases out there where teenagers aren't being affected. Like I said, I do think the teenage athletes are being affected tremendously. But for the most part, I don't see a great big, like, oh my God, from these kids. They probably are more frustrated with having to be in the house with their goddamn parents all the goddamn time than they are that they can't see their friends, because they can still text their friends and shit. So, you know, they do the group chats, the group this, the group that. I shit you not, man. I work with kids who have been friends with other friends, called them they roles, they aces, they this, they that, had never met the people before. Totally 100% online relationship.
Yeah.
You know, so
we ain't friends like that, if I ain't. Yeah.
Right. Like if I ain't got no idea of how you physically look in real life, like but that's I keep going back to that. You know, I done talked to kids who be talking about they ace, and I'd be like, where they live at? Oh, they live in some other country. And you'd be like, huh? Did they move there after y'all became friends?
That's not your ace.
I met them on the internet.
Y'all just talk online.
You know? But anyway.
Social isolation, though, right now, social life, like a lot of people are running from social isolation. Like we saw that with white people when they were just bottled up and just, they were protesting, I don't want to be locked up. Like when they stormed that federal building with the guns and stuff. And it's like the social isolation for black people, especially around the time of the death of George Floyd, coming off the heels of Ahmaud Arbery. We saw how the social isolation, for one, forced people to see what was going on, but also it helped. It was added fuel to the fire of frustration, and I think that's why a lot of these protests and a lot of these riots and things went on a bit longer because of the isolation, because of the shutting down of things. Like you ain't had nothing else to do but get out your pent up anger, like. All states protesting. We ain't never seen that. Everybody protesting. Now, everybody gone and a lot of people ain't doing shit no more.
Yeah.
But we saw that. But within our communities, the issues are still there. Like, the issues are still there. After all the protesting, after painting all the Black Lives Matter in the streets, the issues are still there. And we are still dealing with the trauma on a daily basis in isolation. That's not healthy.
If I could for a second go back to even the coping thing, though, I think I think for a lot of people that's what's so hard about sitting still, like about staying indoors, is because like after a while when you in the house, the only thing you got to really address is you. Like at some point in isolation, you have to deal with you. You know, you have to deal with your demons, your this, your that. And I think a lot of people are real uncomfortable with that. So, hence this great, like, I don't even think anybody's social distancing now. Everybody's comfortable putting their mask on and going outside and living life as if, you know, COVID never happened. Some people ain't even wearing their mask. They're just outside. But I do, like, that's something that I have always felt like is one of the reasons why people are so uncomfortable with sitting in the space by themselves, is just the whole concept of having to deal with themselves. Like, you know, we're finding out that people don't really like their spouses, they don't really like their kids. You know, we're finding all of that out just from the posts, things that's being said, the happiness and whatnot. But, you know, I think one of the things that we also need to be paying attention to is the fact that most people don't even like themselves. So what kind of mental space are we really talking about? You know what I'm saying?
But you know, when, as you're saying, I think about the logs on the fire, the continued logs on the fire, because our mental space was already not good. And now we're dealing with the whole pandemic that literally has changed and is still changing the way we exist. We were so used to existing one way for so long. Now it's been abruptly changed. And now, like you said, a lot of people are still at risk for contracting COVID, but you got people not adhering to it. You got people not wearing masks, still going out in mass crowds and doing things. Like, man, look, if you must ain't never had that thing stuck down your goddamn nose. I'm good. But also reading of how the short term and the long term effects of COVID, man, that's more loss on the fire for us dealing with COVID. And then, but still, remember, we're still in isolation. Yep. Like, we're in jails with no walls. Like, right now, for me, my job, I can't go 40 miles outside of the city. They ain't telling me I can't go nowhere. They're just saying if you go 40 miles outside the city, you got to quarantine for 14 days, and we'll think about how we're going to pay you.
And that's the part that I...
So, imagine...
Go ahead.
No, I'm just going to say, imagine that. Luckily for me, I wouldn't try this for me personally, but for a lot of other people who traveling is what they do, imagine how that's affecting their mental health.
But I think that's one of the components that people aren't really... That's another stressor, because I do know quite a few people who have jobs that have basically said, if you go outside of an 100-mile radius of your job, and they're generous with that, because I know some other jobs where if you leave the city, if you go beyond...
But that's what they told us. I mean, that's what they told us. Like, we can go, like I said, it's 40 miles. So I can go to Quincy, but I can't go to Madison. Because Madison is 55 miles away. Quincy is only 22.
Right, but like that, I'm just the added stressors of if you leave the area, you will not be paid, and you have to get quarantined. And then what if something comes up where you have to leave the area? You know,
right.
What if you...
For a reason.
Right. Like, all of these other pressures are stressors are also added into the mix because of COVID that doesn't necessarily have anything to do directly with you catching it, but has everything to do with the way the world is responding to it. You know, for a period of time, I know Amazon has stopped doing next-day shipping, and there were a lot of people I know that relied on next day shipping for some pretty important things for them in their personal lives. And while it's easy to adjust to once you know it's happening, that first blip in service for some of these people caused major trauma for them mentally. So, you know, there are a bunch of different situations happening with the shipping, the distribution of products, even getting masks. There was a period of time where you really couldn't get masks anywhere. So, just all of these additional stressors added on to the stressors that we already have. And all of that seems to be exacerbated by the fact that we are living in a time where it's become popular and acceptable for news agencies to gain ratings off of broadcasting black death. So we're seeing more black people die now than we probably have ever before.
Right.
In the middle of being supposedly, and even for those people that aren't quarantining themselves, there's still a bit of stress in knowing that I should be quarantined, but I'm not doing it. That's still a stressor.
It
so
is.
It's a
reaction. It's a reaction to a situation. You're trying to correct yourself. You're trying to correct the situation and have as much control as you can, even though you know you don't have much control. And that ends with a toll on your mental health. All still while dealing with the normal police brutality and the normal white supremacy that we deal with of white people, regular white people trying to kill us, and the real white people constantly oppressing us, the police harassing us, and dealing with ills and stresses within our community, still dealing with the poverty, going to some of these places, man, like going to a housing project, and you see how people are living. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, you think it's just like, wow, like somebody really lives here. Every day, you see the condition of it, and you kind of understand why people the way they are, why people react the way they are. People just exist like that. Mental health never had a chance. Imagine every day you got into your life, every day gunshots, every day trauma, violence, dealing with white supremacy, and then, oh yeah, let me throw some COVID in that shit. You can't go nowhere. Like, that's a lot for black people and old to deal with, right? Like, even now, if you need medical care and you tell somebody you got trouble breathing, oh, you can't get medical care until you get a COVID test. That's an added stressor.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people don't know, do not listen to me. If you listen to this, do not show up to a medical facility to talk about you having trouble breathing or any COVID signs. Because guess what? You're not going to get medical care until you come back with a negative test. But imagine also, what if this thing you're dealing with is something you already been dealing with? You know you ain't got no COVID, but you can't deal with it until you get your COVID test. So added stuff.
Yeah. We it's a lot right now on our plates, and this is probably a real good and interesting month to have Black mental health awareness because of all of the things going on is compounded and magnified by the fact that we're going through a pandemic right now. And it's a pandemic that is having an oversized effect on the Black community. We're being fucked up for various reasons. You know, the saying is always going to be true until we change it. But for right now, we ain't changed it. So it's still true. When white people catch the cold, Black people catch the flu. So now we're finding out what happens when white people catch a goddamn pandemic. You know what I'm saying? And
yeah, when white people catch the pandemic, Black people catch the Black plague.
Yeah, because we're fucking dying.
The bubonic plague. Right. But like we talked about in January. Go ahead. I was going to say, like we talked about in January, the compounding issues. Like Black people, once again, we have to get our physical health together. Because in getting our physical, that does help our mental health. Because a lot of things that we're dying from, remember, SARS-CoV-2 is the virus. COVID-19 is the disease. Just like HIV is the virus, AIDS is the disease. You contract SARS-CoV-2. When it gets into your body and it grows and it grows, then get the COVID-19. That's what happens. But then it's the opportunistic infections in your body that get a chance to open up and stretch and flex their muscles. And these are the things that take you out. So we have to get our physical health in order, which will help our mental health, but that doesn't negate you getting specific mental health care. But because our bad physical health is exacerbating our mental health. But another problem with that is goddamn poverty and food desert. So it's one thing to tell people to get their physical health, but how do I have physical health in the middle of a food desert and dealing with poverty?
It's a lot, man. It's a lot we got to deal with. It's a lot we got to work on. And that's exactly why I'm also, taking a knee. Get the fuck out of here. See how I brought it back around?
Well, I mean, but that's what, look. Yeah, I like that. But see, that's why I always ask, how does painting Black Lives Matter in the street? How does protesting? How does taking a knee? At the end of the day, how do all these things help keep us safe and healthy? In a life. Like, tangibly, how do these things really help? Because if you can't, if the answer to that is they don't help us, then why the fuck are we doing it? Hey, man.
Because it looked good.
And that adds to, that compounds our depleting mental state. So to keep doing the same thing over and 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 over, knowing it doesn't work. But we have to expect more from people than just symbolic gestures, especially when we are watching ourselves die every day. All right, man.
That might be a problem too, though. Is that we ain't paying attention to the fact that we're dying day by day. You know, that might actually be a problem too, because you know Black people have gotten real good at ignoring Black death.
But my thing, my question is it, are we not paying attention, or do we? Because it's become normalized. To think how many times people scrolling through social media, see somebody get killed, and keep scrolling, and just keep going, and then within 2 minutes, you forgot that you saw that video until somebody bring it up, and then you want to get mad.
I mean, I think it's a combination. I think we have been social conditioned, but I think that it's still one of them things where it's like, even if we go back to Trayvon Martin, or, you know, we go back even further than that to Emmett Till, and I'm sure we could go back even further than that, but the cultural national response black people has had to the death of other black people for the last, I'd say the last 60, 70 years at least, has been inadequate. And I'm not saying there haven't been groups and organizations and people out there that have had adequate responses. I'm just saying, as a collective, I feel like our responses just have been inadequate. And so to that, I don't know that the social conditioning that's normalized black death in recent times can be blamed for the inadequate response we're seeing now, when there's a history of inadequate responses that predates this particular type of social engineering. I know there are other forms of social engineering that have been at play for centuries. But that's all an interesting and another conversation for another day that I do think still has something to do with mental health.
Oh man, you know, we could bring it. We got time to bring it back, man. We got a whole month that we dedicate to mental health issues, man. But we do want to set the foundation for this year's mental health training, because we got a special. It's a special condition with this COVID. The underlying issue is, you know, racism always, but we got COVID on top of that. So we got to analyze it different and come at it a bit different.
Okay, I'm with it.
Hey, man. I'm with it. You got any parting shots?
In your motherfucking face.
In your motherfucking face. Hey, man, let's do our best to make sure we take care of ourselves and take care of each other. If we don't take care of ourselves, who the hell else will? Because we see that nobody else really cares about black people. We got to care about ourselves. And if you're out there thinking that other people are our real allies, the people out there saying they're allies, hey, man, we got to start asking them for tangible proof. Tangible proof, man. Once again, though, take care of our bodies, take care of our minds, take care of our souls, take care of our community. Two fingers in the air.
All I want to say is that they don't really care about us.